Texas America World. This is Mark Ankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. In the first hour of the show, we were examining the economic crisis. Ambrose Evans Pritchard of the UK Telegraph has a story dated August the 10th talking about how Beijing's control of $1.3 trillion could be used to devastate the U.S. economy. The Chinese hold $900 billion of U.S. bonds. What happens if they dump those bonds? What happens to the dollar's reserve currency status? Ambrose Evans Pritchard, of course, quotes Hillary Clinton as saying that foreign control over 44% of the U.S. national debt has left America acutely vulnerable, unquote. Then yesterday, Ambrose Evans Pritchard of the UK Telegraph has a new post entitled Fears of Dollar Collapse as Saudis Take Fright. That is ominous information that is there as of yesterday in the UK Telegraph, in conjunction with what Mike Whitney has also said in Global Research as of September the 19th in a piece entitled U.S. Banks Brace for Storm Surge as Dollar and Credit System Reel. Looking at all of that economic information, we have to feel fairly uneasy about America's ongoing problem in the Middle East as it relates to our policy in Palestine, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and now this talk within the neoconservative community that the United States needs to attack Iran preemptively. All of this, some would argue, goes back to a fundamental problem for American foreign policy relating to the Palestinians. What we as Americans, as a government, supported in 1948, what has transpired in the 60 years since, is the United States moving in the same direction as Great Britain, both economically and in decline as a world empire? And is it moving in such a direction, among other things, because it is supporting an unsustainable policy in the Middle East, and especially as that relates to the Palestinians? This is something that we're going to be talking about this morning with our guest, Dr. John Quigley of the Ohio State University School of Law. Dr. Quigley, how are you, sir?
Very good.
Sir, how do you see this present situation with the Palestinians, not simply politically, but legally, and in regard to what American obligations in this situation should be when it comes to international law?
Well, we should be promoting self-determination for the Palestinians. They clearly need some kind of state, either on their own or in conjunction with what is now the Israeli state. But we don't seem to be moving very much in that direction. Instead, we seem to be supporting the policies of the Israeli government, which have been to take over more and more of the Palestinian land through settlements over the last decade or so in particular.
Well, yes, I'm looking at an article that was in E. Michael Jones' Culture Wars, going back to the July-August edition. Gene Conti of Columbus, Ohio, has a piece there entitled The Betrayal of the Christians of the Middle East, and it cites some statistics from a book entitled The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. The author of that book, Elon Pop, has been on this show before. And looking at these statistics, it's pretty clear that we have had a real transition in Palestine demographically from 1897 onward, where the Palestinian control of that territory has been statistically an absolute eclipse. And many would argue that that has been a targeted eclipse, as we have seen a real political transition that has caused, many would say, a demographic disenfranchisement of the Palestinians. Would you agree with that?
I think that's accurate. If you look back to the late 19th century, it was an Arab-populated country. You had a population of Jews who had been there since ancient times, but that was very, very small. Somewhere within the range of 2%, 4% of the population.
We'll be back with Professor John Quigley of the Ohio State University School of Law talking about the Palestinian crisis. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Mark Dan, Fox America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Dr. John Quigley of the Ohio State University School of Law. We are talking about the whole situation of Palestine and the plight of the Palestinians and the quandary that it presents for American foreign policy and has presented to American foreign policy, lo, these last 60 years. Quoting from Jean Conte's very fine piece in Michael Jones' Culture Wars, Ms. Conte of Columbus, Ohio, has an essay entitled A Betrayal of the Christians of the Middle East. She says as follows. In the ethnic cleansing of Palestine, Ilan Pop explains that in 1897, Naaman Sirkin, the founder of socialist Zionism, called for a home for Jewish people of Palestine, which he said must be evacuated for the Jews. Over the next 10 years, 40,000 Zionists arrived in Palestine. By 1920, at the beginning of the British Mandate, the Palestinians still numbered 90% of the people of that land. By 1947, Palestinians made up a two-thirds majority of the people in Palestine. According to the CIA World Factbook as of 2004, Israel's Jewish population was 76.4%, and non-Jewish, mostly Arabic, was 23.6%. The New York Times 2005 Almanac lists Israel's ethnic groups as 80% Jewish and 19.9% non-Jewish, mostly Arabic. That, again, is from the essay The Betrayal of the Christians in the Middle East by Gene Conti of Columbus, Ohio. Dr. Quigley, looking at those statistics, what do we say in 2007 about what we do for the Palestinians from this point onward?
That's an excellent question and a very difficult one, because it's very hard to reverse that much historical change. I think we're in a posture where we've done so much damage that it's really impossible to restore, you know, what one might say should have been. And you're left with trying to figure out some, you know, lesser solution that will be acceptable in a partial way. But the change in the ethnic composition in that country has been quite dramatic, as those figures you cite show, and the figures are quite accurate, I think, as you cited them. It was first the British who, after the First World War, came into power there in Palestine, and who promoted the idea of Jewish migration for a variety of reasons relating to British foreign policy. And then at a certain point, they saw that that was a policy that just couldn't be sustained, because the land was being taken over from the local population. And eventually the British decided to get out. And I think, unfortunately, right at that time, you, of course, had what had occurred in Europe during the Second World War with the massive atrocities against Jews. And when the United Nations came to deal with this issue in 1947, they didn't simply deal with Palestine as an entity. That is, you had Britain leaving it and asking the UN to come up with a solution. What the UN did was to combine that issue with the issue of the displaced persons in Europe. That is, there were people who had been either in the concentration camps or hadn't been in the camps, but were nonetheless wanted to get out. They wanted to leave. Most of them wanted to come to North America, Canada, United States. But those countries were not that interested in accepting them. And the UN dealt with the two issues together and basically decided to force those displaced persons to go to Palestine, as a way of finding somewhere for them to go. And they really didn't think all that much about the impact that they were having on Palestine.
So in essence, what we have here is a situation where one group of displaced people, in a very tragic situation, that whole circumstance, as the UN was attempting to address that politically, resulted tragically in the displacement of 750,000 people who were presently in Palestine at that juncture. So in essence, one tragedy beget another tragedy, and it seems that the British could not find a solution to this. And now, of course, the United States is wrestling for a solution itself, it seems to me. One of the most ominous things, as I look at this statistically, is not just what is in Ms. Conti's essay in regard to the incredible demographic changes in Palestine in the last 100 years or so, but I came across something. There was a guy on this show weeks ago, the deputy chief of mission of the Palestine Liberation Organization's mission presence in Washington, D.C., who was saying that at the time of the UN partition of Palestine, that, of course, what was it, 51% of the land was deemed to be ceded to the Jews, and 49% to the Palestinians. And then, of course, from that point, we get to the 1967 war. And then when we get to 1993 and the Oslo Accords, we see that the Palestinian percentage of that land, which presumably at one time was at 100%, shrunk to 49% in 1947, 1948. Then it shrunk to 22% at the time of the Oslo Accords in 1993. And Hesham Talawi told me the other day that right now that 22% that the Palestinians agreed to take at Oslo has in reality shrunk to approximately 9% because of Israeli occupation policies. If that's an accurate figure, we're going from, say, 100% 100 years ago to 9% now under very egregious circumstances, as we read about them in both Gaza and the West Bank. Is there any American political credibility left with the Palestinians and with the Arab community in regard to trying to redress the injustice that was done to the Palestinians in 1948? I can't imagine that they would be too interested in anything we've got to say at this point.
Unfortunately, I'm afraid that's probably right. When the UN did come up with this plan in 1947, as you averted to, it was viewed by the Arabs of Palestine as very unfair. It gave the bulk of the territory to a Jewish state that would, but at the time, I think, as you mentioned earlier, the Jewish percentage of the population was only about a third, and that was basically mostly people that had just come in the last couple of years. And so that was opposed by the Arabs, and it was the United States that promoted that. The United States arm-twisted to get that through the General Assembly, that partition. To its credit, the United States realized a couple of months later that it was a bad idea and backed off it, and the State Department was working for some other solution for Palestine. But unfortunately, nothing came about before the time that Britain withdrew, and when Britain withdrew, The Zionist element declared statehood for Israel, which was viewed by the U.S. State Department as a very bad idea, and which the State Department opposed. However, President Truman supported it, apparently for reasons related to his upcoming election with Tom Dewey in the fall of 1948, and that what was. To come back to your question, something done by the United States that the Palestinians can really never forget, that Truman was the one that really allowed that to happen, and that was at a time when the ethnic cleansing was going on full steam, as was brilliantly written about in the book that you mentioned earlier by Ilan Pappe, the historian at the University of Haifa.
Well, you know, in that book, which I have now read in its entirety. At the time that Elon was on this show, I was just starting his book. But he refers to some things that are also cited by Ms. Conti in her essay for Michael Jones' Culture Wars, talking about something called Plan D, or Dalat in Hebrew. And this Plan D, among other things, was accomplished or manifested in places like Deir Yassin, in April of 1948, where we read all kinds of things now about what happened there in regard to an event and series of events that I think can fairly be described as ethnic cleansing. And yet, of course, these are things that I was not learning about in the American school system, public or private, all through my education up to and including both college and graduate school. How could something this horrific have been concealed from the American public for this long? And, you know, what, again, in the wake of what happened at Deir Yassin and in the wake of the various things that Ilan Pappe chronicles in his book, where do we go from here with this? Obviously, we can't, I don't think we can reverse the clock historically and simply render Israel an entity that should no longer exist. But in the wake of the circumstances behind its creation and what it has meant to the world in these last 60 years, especially to the Palestinians, how do we now come up with something that will at least cause a peaceful coexistence between the protagonists in the time that remains in world history? What do you see as even the semblance of a political proposal that could begin to move this thing in the direction of some sort of a tragic reconciliation?
Well, there are two basic options, I think. One is for there to be a Palestine state in that little bit of territory that you mentioned, the 22% that the Palestinians agreed to in 93. The other,
sir, my bump music is coming up. When we come back from the break, continue with that. I really apologize for the interruption. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. When Professor John Quigley returns, we'll ask him to articulate what he believes is the beginning of a political solution to this tragedy. Stay tuned.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Why continue suffering from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people are reporting improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no reported side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Just don't treat the symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions, and it's very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call BioSolutions toll free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that number, 866-885-6625.
Introducing the new Blueprint Water Unit. This one-of-a-kind water technology uses natural frequencies to clean harmful toxins from your drinking water. We start with one of the best four-stage reverse osmosis systems. Then we retrofit the Blueprint water system with twin vortices. This primary technology is designed to clear harmful water memory. We then imprint Blueprint frequencies harmonic to the human body. This is the only known living water recreated by live essence infusion. According to reports from users, the water helps balance the body's internal pH. Others have said the water has helped promote weight loss through detoxification. This water is so good, your body begins to crave its healthy input. For more information, call Natural Solution toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that's 866-885-6625.
This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Professor John Quigley of the Ohio State University School of Law is with us this morning to discuss this whole issue of Palestine, not simply the historical tragedy that has been created and manifested in history by this whole situation, but trying to grapple with the whole question this morning of what would be, in the wake of what has happened, the beginning of a tragic best we can come up with solution to this whole situation that has been largely unresolved now for these last 60 years. Dr. Quigley, go ahead, sir, with what you think should be the beginning of a negotiated position on this.
Well, there are, as I say, two possibilities. One is a separate state for the Palestinians in that small piece of territory that is referred to as the West Bank of the Jordan River and the Gaza Strip. And that's the idea that was put forward by the PLO starting in the late 1970s, especially 1980s, and that was behind the Oslo Agreement of 1993. The problem with that, as you mentioned earlier, is that so much land has been taken over by Israeli settlements in that territory since 1993 that it's not clear that Israel is willing to give up that territory. And increasingly, Palestinians have become disenchanted with the idea of a second state, a state of their own, for that precise reason, and also for the reason that part of their idea about having a separate state involved as well some solution for the Palestinians that were ethnically cleansed in 1948. And they and their descendants now number 4 or 5 million. Many of them are living in rather bad circumstances, very bad circumstances in nearby countries. So part of the idea of a separate state was that while there would be a separate state in the West Bank and Gaza for the Palestinians, those who had been displaced in 1948 would have the option of returning to their home areas wherever they might be. And many of those, most of those would be in what is now Israel. But Israel has been adamantly opposed to that. So that was another position by Israel that made it difficult for the Palestinians to continue with their idea of a separate state. And increasingly, you find Palestinians promoting the idea of a single state in the entire area that was under British control between the First and Second World War. That is, it would include what is now Israel, would include the West Bank, include the Gaza Strip. You would have one state, and everyone who was there and everyone who was displaced from there could live there. That is a bit more attractive, I think, to many Palestinians, simply because they've decided that this idea of a second state isn't going to work because Israel keeps pressing them territorially and keeps whittling it down to a smaller and smaller piece of territory. And moreover, Israel says, well, if you have your own state, then the people who were displaced in 1948 should go there. They shouldn't come back to where they were from. So all of that combined has led to a major rethinking within the Palestinian community over the last couple of years about the viability of a separate state. So you've got those two options out there. Both of them have huge problems, but I think that's the landscape at the moment.
Well, introducing something that's obviously very political at this point, Dr. Quigley. I'm thinking of an exchange that took place in the MSNBC Republican presidential debates some weeks ago, where Congressman Ron Paul of Texas, who is running in the Republican primaries for president, and of course he is the lone, as near as I can tell, the lone opponent of American foreign policy in the Middle East, running as a Republican, and he is the lone opponent of Mr. Bush's present war on terror and Mr. Bush's decision to invade Iraq in March of 2003. And he had an exchange that I'm sure you're familiar with Rudolph Giuliani, where Ron Paul was suggesting that American foreign policy, and I think he was especially thinking of the Middle East at this point, had everything to do with what happened at 9/11. Giuliani, of course, very vociferously attacked Ron Paul's assertion that that was the case and is the case. Do you believe that there is a direct link, sir, between American foreign policy in the Middle East just in these last 60 years and what we have seen in the way of political blowback coming from the other direction as it relates to antagonism toward us in the Islamic world, as it relates to so-called acts of terrorism and violence that have now been directed against American citizens and American assets abroad? Is there a direct connection? And is it, even though we don't condone terrorism, obviously, is it an understandable response to an incredible level of political frustration and what has been the immovable rock when it comes to American foreign policy in the region? I want to ask you to address that when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Dr. John Quigley of the Ohio State University School of Law, talking about blowback. Is there a connection between American foreign policy in the Middle East and the antagonism directed toward us in the Islamic world? Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Morning, neighbor.
Hey, shouldn't you be at work?
I am. As a matter of fact, I pulled another all-nighter.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, at least I'm making money 24/7, but I never have to go to work.
So what do you do?
Not very much at all now. About a month ago, I heard about this website. It's got a funny name. It's DidYouRobBillGates.com.
That is funny.
Yeah, you can earn $1,200 to $12,000 a week starting the very first week.
Oh, is that how you bought that new mower?
Yeah, and the motorcycle I've always wanted, too. You should log on. Find out how you can become financially free.
So what was that website?
It's www.DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Just wait, I'll go get a pen so I can write that down.
You don't need to write it down. It's easy to remember. DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Yeah, DidYouRobBillGates.com. That is easy.
It's easy, and the money is awesome.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. In the first hour of the show, we were looking at the economy, with special reference to the posts of Ambrose Evans Pritchard in the UK Telegraph, his article of August 10th in regard to the U.S. dollar and its threat, or the threat that it would be removed as the reserve currency of the world because of the potential dumping or the threat to dump $900 billion of U.S. bonds now under the control of Communist China. And then, of course, Ambrose Evans Pritchard has a post today in the UK Telegraph talking about the fact that the Saudi Arabians are breaking with the United States over a feared dollar collapse. This in conjunction with what Mike Whitney has written for Dr. Michael Chasadosky's Global Research on September the 19th suggests that there are problems ahead. Whitney's piece is entitled U.S. Banks Brace for Storm Surge as dollar and credit systems reel. Think of this, folks, in regard to what we're now talking about with the Middle East. Has the United States reached a critical mass in terms of what Kevin Phillips suggests in his book, An American Theocracy, is the beginning of the end of the American empire. Unrestrained credit, shaky central banking, an overextension of military empire, the utilization of various forms of religious fanaticism to couch a foreign policy in terms that is not in any sense of the word religious, but has a very strong political and economic agenda behind it. Kevin Phillips, I think, would suggest that this is precisely where we are. Our guest here in this last hour of the show is Dr. John Quigley of the Ohio State University School of Law. We are talking about the tragedy of Palestine and what we do about it. Dr. Quigley, as we think about this question, where were we before the break, sir?
Well, we were talking about blowback and whether the terror that the United States has experienced is attributable in some fashion to our own activities in that region. And unfortunately, I think there's a great deal of truth to that. This was dramatized rather famously in the days immediately following September 11, 2001, when a Saudi prince presented Mayor Giuliani with a check for $10 million as a contribution towards helping, in the aftermath of the attacks. And Mayor Giuliani gratefully accepted the check, was very happy about it. Then the prince did a press conference in which he suggested that the United States might well look into its policy in regard to Israel and Palestine as a way of protecting itself against future attacks of this kind. Now, Mayor Giuliani interpreted that as a condonation of the attacks that had occurred in New York and immediately said that New York would not cash the check. But I think that while that was probably a politically astute thing for Mayor Giuliani to do, it was not a valid position on the merits. That is, I think the hostility that is felt in the Arab world towards the United States is largely a result of our own actions there, of our own quest for oil there over the last half century, and of our meddling in the political affairs of the region, which involves probably most significantly the Palestine issue, but not only the Palestine issue. Back in 1953, when in Iran you had some minor efforts to nationalize the oil of the country from the big oil companies, the CIA participated in an effort that was successful to overthrow the government of Iran so that that would not occur. And we put in place the fellow who had been kind of a figurehead previously, the Shah. And that kind of thing causes incredible resentment, I mean, not only in Iran, but throughout that region that we're seen to be doing things of that sort. We intervened in that time period in Syria, in Lebanon, to try to fashion governments that were favorable to our interest in gaining access to the oil of the region. So we've engaged, I think, in a variety of policies, all connected with oil over the years that have led to extreme and antipathy towards the United States. Now, that's not manifested in for all people there in violence against the United States, but they understand the violence that is engaged in by others. So it is, unfortunately, a generalized antagonism toward us, and I think we need to address that.
Yeah, I think we do, too, Dr. Quigley. I lived in Iran years ago. My father was a director of logistics for the Shah of Iran's Air Force back in the 1970s when he was with the Lockheed Company. That was after being in the United States Air Force for 32 years. And I began to learn a lot about this over the years, not simply in my time in Iran, but in the reading that I've done in the years since. And when I think of 1953, for example, I was not alive at that time, but reading certain historical chronicles of the record that are now in my possession, I think of Stephen Kinzer's book, All the Shah's Men, And then the American Free Press has a book on the CIA in Iran, which contains a lot of the actual intelligence documents generated by the American CIA and the British MI6 at the time. And when one reads these declassified documents that were obtained by the American Free Press through the George Washington University National Security Archive, it makes for very, very disturbing reading. And I was talking with some Persian friends about this recently who are now based in Los Angeles. And as we were chatting about some of this sad history, one of them said to me, you know, when you look at American foreign policy, it's basically an extension of what was the older British foreign policy in the Middle East, which, of course, the British could not sustain politically, militarily, or economically. And he said, and this fellow was saying to me, I go back to two things that characterize the earlier British policy that are now characteristic of the American policy. One is the support for the so-called Sykes-Picot Agreement, where Britain and France drew up all of the boundary lines of all of the present-day nation-states in the Middle East, which did not necessarily correspond at all to the ethnic and tribal and historical realities of the region. And he said the second is the Balfour Declaration, with the earlier British support for Zionism through Balfour that the United States is now trying to sustain. Is this, in fact, why we have reached this point, Dr. Quigley, that oil and Zionism are the pillars of American foreign policy in the region, and that the political interests in this country that are behind those two entities are so strong that there's absolutely no chance in the Palestinian mind and in the Arab mind generally that we are going to modify these policies?
Well, our policy has been sufficiently consistent, unfortunately, that I think that is the analysis that you would find generally held by people in the Arab world, that there's not any great prospect that the United States is going to engage in a radical shift. You don't see much difference between the political parties, between the Republicans and the Democrats on this issue. So a change in Washington is not likely to lead to any change in this regard. And I think that does lead to a kind of despondency, which is manifested in violence against the United States on the part of some people there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. And, you know, thinking of Rudolph Giuliani, for example, and his repartee with Ron Paul in the MSNBC presidential debates, and, of course, Giuliani's consistent refusal to see any connection between American foreign policy in the Middle East and the blowback that has been directed toward us subsequently. There are a number of things that are suggestive to me at this point. It has come to public attention that Norman Podhoretz of Commentary Magazine, very strong link historically to the American Jewish Committee, has now become a foreign policy advisor to Rudolph Giuliani. And is this not a microcosm of a very controversial but nonetheless real problem in the American political scene? And that is that when you look at the upper tier candidates in the Republican Party, speaking of Giuliani, McCain, and Romney on the one hand, and then when we look at Clinton and Obama and Edwards on the other, trying to be fair to all of these people, but looking at some of the public statements that they have made, are we not looking at a situation where on this whole question of Israel, there is more agreement between these candidates and more agreement between the two major parties than disagreement in regard to the fact that support for Israel is virtually an almost an absolutist support for Israel, is a virtual article of faith that has to be asserted before you can be a viable presidential contender in this country?
Unfortunately, I'm afraid that is the case, and it goes back now a number of elections. If you look at the elections in the 90s and the 80s, you find virtually the same scenario, that the candidates are vying with each other to be stronger supporters of Israel. And I think it goes back to the reason that President Truman was inclined to recognize the Israeli state when it was set up in 1948. He sees that that's better in terms of U.S. politics. regardless of what is good for the region. It's especially tragic, I think, in the instances of Ms. Clinton and Mr. Obama, because they're both people who, in their earlier political careers, seemed to understand the situation some. So they have shifted dramatically on the question as they have risen in the political hierarchy and have become presidential candidates.
Yes, at the same time, it is very curious that you have a situation where on both right and left in the United States, and at the risk of being too autobiographical, I would bring this into play in terms of describing this for the audience. My older brother is a trial attorney. He's in Dayton, Ohio. He is a member of the Ohio State Bar, although he, of course, went to the University of Texas Law School. He would describe himself, I think fairly, as a very port-of-center member of the Democratic Party, very left-of-center. I think he would describe himself that way. I don't think that that's unfair at this point. I, on the other hand, left the Republican Party in 1996. Most people would describe me as a Buchanan-Taft Republican. And yet on the subject of the war, my brother on the left and I on the old American right largely see eye to eye on this thing. Is this an indication that maybe there is the possibility of building a larger American political coalition that will begin to insist that we have to modify what we're doing in the Middle East?
I think there may well be something to that, in particular now with the situation in Iraq and with the very wide and I think accurate perception that we were lied to by the president, that our policy there is not what it is said to be by the White House. And that kind of questioning of the White House may lead to a questioning on this issue as well, and I think that kind of sentiment is shared by persons of quite varying political persuasions in the United States.
Yes, and it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out in terms of the presidential sweepstakes when by the time we get to the so-called finalists with the two major parties, we could conceivably, in my judgment at least, be looking at a third-party candidate of some sort to be addressing these issues, because I'll be the pessimist today and say that I think that depending on which of the upper-tier candidates receives the Republican nomination and the Democratic nominations respectively, we are not likely to see too much in the way of creative solutions on this Middle Eastern quandary coming out of these camps in the fall of 2008. We have a caller for Dr. Quigley. It's George in Florida. Go ahead, sir.
How you doing, Mark and Mr. Quigley?
Good morning.
Yes. You know, the thing is, I remember I was 12 years old when they had the Iranian hostages. And, you know, when you look back like 1953 with a false flag, and they took out an elective Iranian leader. And then you look fast forward to 1979, and you know, they made it look like that the Iranians just took the hostages and overran the embassy for the reason is they hated America. But then I found out that the Iranians demanded that the Shah be returned to face trial for the crimes of torturing his own people. Am I right about that?
Yes, that's quite accurate. That was one of the demands at the time in Iran, that the United States return the Shah. He had come to the United States for medical treatment. So that whole revolution, I think, was a response to what had gone on there before. I mean, one can imagine what Iran might have looked like had we not done what we did in 1953. I think Mr. Dankoff probably knows all of this history better than I do to relate to you. But, I mean, had there not been that 1953 coup, what you had was a rather, you know, moderate centrist government that was elected by the people. You had a fairly decent level of democracy in Iran at the time, and there was every prospect that that would continue into the future. Instead, we got the regime of the Shah, which was very repressive, and then a reaction to that, which was motivated by antipathy towards the United States for having brought the Shah into power. So the entire thrust of Iranian politics from 1979 to the present is attributable to what we did there. And I think we just seem to keep promoting policies that result in antipathy towards ourselves and make life more dangerous for us.
I even noticed, like in Iran, they say they're mean to Christians and Jews, and I'm finding out that Christians and the Jewish population in Iran live in peace, and that Iran, even though they got problems with the mullahs and all that stuff, is a pretty much a civilized country, and the people are very educated. And they're very pro-Western. And why are we going trying to nuke these people? The problem is just the oil companies want the Iranian oil. It's the biggest oil reserve. And, you know, like I say, we're going to face consequences if we bomb Iran.
I think that's right. I think bombing Iran would be a huge mistake. And it amazes me that after the fiasco in Iraq that the neoconservatives and the administration can still get the ear of the president to some degree on the question of possibly bombing Iran.
Well, thank you.
God bless you, sir. We'll be back with Dr. John Quigley. Listening to some of these things reminds me of the prophetic words of Tariq Aziz before the Iraq War. It's all about oil and Israel. This is Mark Dankos, America on RBN. Stay tuned.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Attention, this is an RBN financial news bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I wanted to thank Dr. John Quigley of the Ohio State University School of Law for being on the show today to discuss Palestine specifically and American foreign policy in the Middle East generally. In the first hour of the show, of course, we were talking about some of these economic problems with special reference to the threatened status of the U.S. dollar. We posted a couple of articles for you to take a look at, including two by Ambrose Evans Pritchard in the UK Telegraph, one from August the 10th, the other from September the 20th. I also was referencing what Mike Whitney has to say on this subject in regard to what has happened to the American present dollar crisis, and you can find that particular post at globalresearch.ca. What is happening, according to Mike Whitney, is that the northern rock crisis in Britain is about to make its way across the Atlantic into the United States in terms of ongoing turmoil for the U.S. dollar and also for this whole business of the subprime mortgage industry as it relates to ongoing turmoil in the financial markets. What does it mean? We'll keep an eye on it for you in the days ahead. Wanted to put in one final plug in today's show for the No More Wars for Israel conference that Mark Leonard, the American Free Press, is putting together in Southern California the weekend of October 12th through the 14th. You can find out more information about the conference by going online to nomorewarsforisrael.blogspot.com. That's nomorewarsforisrael.blogspot.com. In regard to confirmed speakers, these now include Phil Turney, the survivor of the attack on the USS Liberty and the former president of the Liberty Veterans Association, American Free Press correspondent and RBN radio talk show host Michael Collins Piper, Patrick Grimm, Mark Dankoff, of course, of the Republic Broadcasting Network and the American Free Press will be present, Hesham Talawi of Current Issues Television, Bedros Hajian, the expert on the Zionist role in the Armenian Genocide will be a part of that conference October 12th through the 14th. Father Christopher Hunter, vote fraud investigator Jim Condit Jr., Dr. Kaukab Sadiq, publisher of the Islamic magazine New Trends. Of course, Mark Glenn of the American Free Press and Crescent and Cross will be present as one of the speakers. Tito Howard, investigator and filmmaker in the 1967 Israeli attack on the USS Liberty, will also be on the speaker's dais. Professor Ray Goodwin of the Barnes Review, Chuck Carlson, founder of We Hold These Truths and Project Straight Gate Ministries, will be a part of the action out there October 12th through the 14th, and also Wendy Campbell and Mark Green of Marwin Media, Dr. Robert Brock, Ellen Mariani, Eileen Fleming, Joachim Martello are also among those who are scheduled to speak. We will see if a few other people who have been invited decide to address this conference. These invitees include former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, former Prime Minister of Malaysia Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, Professors Mearsheimer and Wald, authors of the controversial book The Israeli Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, former U.N. Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter, and former Undersecretary for the Treasury and columnist Paul Craig Roberts. That's the No More Wars for Israel conference coming up in Los Angeles, October 12th to the 14th. My thanks to Dr. John Quigley of the Ohio State University School of Law for joining us today. This is Mark Dankos, America, signing off from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. See you Monday morning at 7 a.m. sharp Central Time. God bless you. The eye of the tiger.
with recent